Bob Costas' new HBO show is back on the record. There isn't a major sport that Bob has not covered in one way or another, including the Olympics. These are the first summer games without him since 1988. Good morning, Bob. Any withdrawal symptoms? How are you feeling being a spectator?
No withdrawal symptoms whatsoever. I planned for the 2016 Rio Olympics to be my last, and that was in my deal with NBC, the last one I signed in 2012. In 2015, they said, if you want to go one Olympics at a time and just extend one at a time, you can do that. And I said, no, I'm absolutely certain 2016 is the last one. So no withdrawal symptoms now, none in 2018 when Mike Tirico took the baton for the Winter Olympics in South Korea. And I feel for my friends and colleagues in Tokyo because this is an extremely difficult Olympics to do. You can only play the hand you're dealt, and they've been dealt a very difficult hand. So, A, I was feeling no withdrawal symptoms whatsoever to begin with, and B, I'm not exactly saying to myself, boy, I wish I could be confined to my hotel room in Tokyo every single hour except for when I'm on the air, wearing a mask, going nowhere, might as well be on planet Z as opposed to Tokyo, not taking in any of the travel log aspect of it. Gee, my fondest wish would be to transport myself to there immediately.
Yeah.
No.
I hear you. I said the other day here that a lot of the criticism Simone Biles got over dropping out would not have been leveled at a man. What do you think?
That's a complicated question. I think there's no one reaction. A lot of times people want something to be, these days, pass, fail, good, bad, high, low. It's a textured situation. She is above all, no matter what people want someone else to represent, demographically, racially, whatever it is, no matter what they want them to represent, above all, she is an individual with an individual set of circumstances that impacted her. So, the people on the right try to plug it into some kind of narrative that's already set in their minds. And then there are those who want to not just understand her and grant her agency to make her own decision and be sympathetic with the fact that despite the fact that she's internationally known, she's still a young woman in a particular set of circumstances. But some of those people want to elevate what she did, not just to a level of, hey, we should understand this, but that we should make her heroic. So I think probably the truth lies somewhere between those two things. But in general, my feeling is one of sympathy for her and her situation. She certainly didn't want to come to the Olympics and then bow out, but a series of things came together, according to her own testimony. I look forward to speaking with her personally, if I can, when she gets back. But as I understand it, at least at this point, Bob, the main thing was the so-called twisties, where you get up in the air executing maneuvers that 99.99 to infinity of us could never imagine, and then she's in a category even above that because she attempts maneuvers successfully in the past that no other gymnast has ever successfully completed. And she gets up in the air and she feels this disconnect between mind and body. There you're not just at risk of point deductions and maybe not winning the gold medal. You're at some risk of catastrophic injury, and other gymnasts have testified to that. So I grant her the benefit of any doubt. Others may have a different reason for their own takes on it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. One of Bob Costas' first jobs was in St. Louis doing radio play-by-play for the Old American Basketball Association. Bob, was basketball your first love? I always thought baseball was. In fact, when I interviewed you on WTTW a few years back, you showed me the Mickey Mantle card in your wallet. Still there?
Yeah, battered, but still there. But you know what's happened over the years? That story got out. And people seem to like it. They connect with it if they're baseball fans of a certain generation. So people will ask me to see it. Strangers will say, hi, Bob, hey, do you have that Mantle card? I'm not saying it happens every day, but it happens fairly frequently. So the original one got kind of battered. But over the years, I've received probably two dozen of them in the mail, mostly from complete strangers who just identified with my connection to that particular era of baseball. Baseball was my first love, still is. Basketball has always been my second favorite sport. So baseball was my first love. Basketball was my first big job.
Bob, we're putting up the Johnny Carson More to Come slide here so we can take a break. Are you still watching those old Tonight shows on antenna TV?
I'm not recording every one of them religiously, but when I come across them, sure.
More with Bob
Costas. Sort of in the same category as Rifleman reruns. You know, if I stumble across it, hey, I remember that episode from when I was nine.
We'll get to the Cubs in a moment. Continuing with Bob Costas. Bob, let's talk about what everyone in Chicago has been talking about all week, the Cubs sell-off. Why don't more players negotiate hometown deals if, like Anthony Rizzo, they seem to want to stay put? Take $70 million instead of $130 million. So you can't buy a boat with two propellers. Get a smaller one.
Well, I'm not so sure you'd have to take only 50% for a hometown deal. But it is very disheartening. I realize it's 5 years now, but when you talk about players who are at the heart of a team's great success, especially Bryant and Rizzo in this case, it's difficult to identify with a team when you know that that's just around the corner. Now, I'm also aware that, as Jerry Seinfeld remarked many, many years ago, that fans have turned to rooting for laundry. As long as you're wearing a Cub uniform or a Met uniform, you know, Seinfeld's a Met fan, that's what you root for, and I get that to a certain extent, and I get that part of the Cubs' appeal will always be Wrigley Field. But for listeners to us this morning of a certain age, even when the Cubs were futile, including 1969 when they were way out in front and then the Mets caught them, at least you could say, this is my team. This is Ernie Banks. This is Ron Santo. This is Billy Williams. This is Ferguson Jenkins. This is Glenn Beckert. Whatever it might be, this is my team. I identify with those guys. You know, there's only a handful of players, I'm thinking less than five max, who remain from the Houston Astros when they won the World Series in 2017. And they've made the postseason every year since then. Not to the World Series, but every year since then. So they've been a good team. Their fans have a reason to root for them. But I just wonder whether the identification is the same. And that kind of identification, Bob, can't be measured in attendance figures alone. It's something that has to do with a different way you connect emotionally with something. And it's obvious that that's been altered, if not reduced.
Bob, do you believe that we are looking at a work stoppage in baseball when the CBA expires? And if so, resilient as baseball has been, can the sport recover yet again?
Strong possibility, but I wouldn't say a certainty or even at this point a greater than 50-50 likelihood. You hope that all parties take a step back and recognize their mutual interests, especially still in the midst of a pandemic, especially the ways the world has changed, especially the fact that baseball faces particular challenges as a sport and as a business in the 21st century. All parties have to realize that it would be a Pyrrhic victory to walk away from these negotiations after a work stoppage and be able to say, well, we won 6 points and they won four, therefore we came out ahead. No, everybody loses if there's a work stoppage. They have to avoid that at all costs.
Bob, what memories stand out for you from your WGN TV stint here during the Bulls games back in 79 and 80 when you were doing the play-by-play?
Well, it was just that one season. The very stylish WGN mustard yellow sport coat. They apparently went to the boys' department and found one that fit me in 1979. And working with Johnny Red Kerr, one of the nicest people, jovial, good-natured always, just one of the nicest people I've ever met in sports. And I liken the games I did with Johnny to the one game I did with John Madden for CBS that same year, I think. It was either 78 or 79. The opening on camera I should have sat on Madden's knee and or Kerr's knee. You know, like, when they should have been the puppeteer and I should have been the mannequin on their knee, because they were taking up 80% of the screen. The other thing I remember is, you know, this is way pre-Jordan. They were kind of a feudal team, and we didn't do any home games. We only did road games. And in those 20 road games, the Bulls were 3-17. And actually, with me, they were 2-17 because I missed one of them for an early network assignment, and they won that game. So it was fun, but it wasn't exactly a winning experience.
Yeah.
Why don't we play this call, Bob, and then I'll ask you about it. The Ryan Sandberg game. Here you go.
1-1 pitch.
And we should point out that Bob just let it breathe. You know, we kind of edited it, condensed it a little bit there. But in your list of memorable calls, Bob, where does that one end up?
Well, you know, that is the first time I've heard that call today.
Yeah, it's a popular one.
I believe I've heard it, whether I was looking for it or not, in one way or another, edited, whatever it might be. I probably heard it 1,000 times. And, you know, I was so happy that day to be there. And I think, if anything, you know, and during the pandemic halt, when the Major League Baseball Network in 2020 was playing full games, memorable games from the past. They played that one a few times, the full broadcast on the NBC Game of the Week with me and Tony Kubek. And I think the thing that holds up isn't so much any craftsmanship of it or any particular call, but how palpable our enjoyment was at being there. I was 32 years old. I was just thrilled to be sitting next to Tony Kubek and being part of the Game of the Week broadcast. Vin Scully and Joe Garagiola were the A team, and I hope we were viewed as 1A rather than B. Tony and I were a pretty good team. And this game was just so classic in every way. It even mattered that they were playing the Cardinals and not somebody else because of the rivalry aspect. Beautiful Saturday afternoon at Wrigley Field. And to this day, if I cross paths with Ryan Sandberg, which I usually do each summer at Cooperstown, it's the first thing he talks about. And he and everybody else recognizes that's the game that marked him as a star and as the front runner for the MVP award, which he would eventually win. Mm-hmm. I can think of one other regular season game that has a title, the Pine Tar game, when mm-hmm. George Brett went nuts when they disallowed briefly his home run. But this is a regular season game that has a name. If you say the Sandberg game, everybody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah, June of 1984. And Bruce Sutter on the mound for the Cards. Watch for Back on the Record with Bob Costas on HBO. You can also see Bob on CNN and on the MLB Network. I love that Sounds of Baseball series. And if you see Bob on the street, he'll probably be glad to do a commentary for you, too. Bob, congratulations on the new show. Loved your Barkley interview. Look forward to more. And, oh, wait, all of our guests get the Chef of the Future's handy housewife helper as a parting gift. Hold on a second.
Tell me, old chef of the future, can it Corey Apple?
Oh, it can Corey Apple.
We'll send that to New York for you, Bob.
I'm speechless. Ahamana, ahamana, ahamana.
Thanks for the time this morning, Bob.
All right, Bob. See ya.